This is John. We would like to invite you, if you'd like to tell us some more of your stories for everybody, not just the one next to you. And the mic is here, you can pick it up like I am and just tell your story. You're welcome. What else did I forget?
Anytime,
come and go, doesn't matter if there are pauses. We are recording it for our family, so, you know, just keep it up and up. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to tell my first story. Right now, if you get the sniffles, they say, COVID! And we all panic and we got COVID. I left was a perpetual nurse to our family from day one. And as soon as we got any kind of shivers, malaria! So everything was malaria to Isla because she knew it so well. And of course we know that at the academy she diagnosed some of the international students for malaria when others wouldn't have found that. And one particular, she actually saved his life, as far as what I told. And she said, always said, well, the Lord had me prepare in Africa so I could be doing what I'm doing now. I read through her journals. They're a tray this long and this big of 24 pieces, probably are there. They're probably more. I didn't say it in the service, but literally the number of prayer, you mentioned the prayer list, 10 names. Some of the days she'd list longer lists and some days less. And I could probably name you whether you're on that list. I'm sure there were some woolsey times. There was some, you know, I could go down the table and say there were times when she was praying for you. So I just want you to know, but watch out because it might be malaria, right? There are some interesting things on the table, including her first doll and the yearbook she published at the nursing school, and some of her paints and brushes, her actual palette, and a little chair that her great-grandmother gave her in 1940-something. So if you haven't had a chance, you can look at that. And then, of course, you do know that there's Amish pie, several kinds, and ice cream. We'll have some servers of ice cream. So plan for a long afternoon, and I hope John Angel will come soon and tell us some stories. His dad was the guy who taught Isla how to hit a baseball to me, and of course trained Phil Stockton how to play golf. But John came all the way from Florida to be here and has prayed for Isla and loved her in a special way. So Johnny, come. Make sure you talk loud.
Don't get me crying here.
Well,
that's fine. Cry. That's perfect. So our family moved to Houghton in the fall of 51, and Isla and I were second graders, and then third, then fourth, then fifth, then sixth at the two-room schoolhouse. My dad used to come down at noon and pitch ball, organize games, and of course Isla was one of the best hitters. But one little story I want to tell. How many have ever heard the name Clay Glickert? Clay Glickert. He was my best man. Say a prayer for him. I think he's in his very last days. But he spoke at his 50th reunion, and he said, you know, when you're a Christian, you ought to put the fun in funeral. So with that in mind, I have a fun Isla story. Isla and I had a little romance. It didn't last long. I think it was second grade. It could have been third grade. And so I remember one day distinctly, we were over at the Shea house, just the two of us, and the main activity, truth be told, was kissing. And we were having a great time. I was enjoying myself, I think she was. But then she paused. She looked up at me, she smiled, and she said, Johnny, no more kisses until you wipe the chocolate off your face. You know, you never forget that. But I would just set the record straight. I have always kept, for the rest of my life, kissing and chocolate to be separate from each other. Thank you, Isla. At the end of sixth grade, we were best buddies. Oh, one other thing I should say. My mom and my dad, they loved Isla. They loved her. At the end of sixth grade, we went our separate ways. You guys went to Wellsville. We went to Wichita, Kansas. And I wasn't reunited with Isla until freshman year of college. And she turned out to be probably the best offensive player on the freshman girls basketball team. And for some strange reason, I was asked to be the coach of that team. And so that was a renewal of our friendship. There was another gal on that team that her name was Sharon Heritage, Sherry, and Sherry and I were married for 48 years. So Isla and Sherry were good friends, they were teammates. And you know, 1 Corinthians 13 tells us we only know in part. So sometimes we have to use our imagination. And I've just thought that Sherry was probably part of that huge welcoming committee when Isla came into heaven in January. So we've always been friends. I last saw her 6 years ago. She didn't go to the 50-year reunion, but at one point there was a break, and in walked Isla and her cousin Phil. And we probably had 10 or 15 minutes. We were drawn to each other, and we both said pretty much the same thing to each other. First girlfriend, first boyfriend. I just think of a wonderful, wonderful life. And I think she's touched people all over the world. In Africa, think of all the international students at the academy and the parents of those students. So just a remarkable person. We've been friends since we were age six. God bless Isla.
When I graduated from Houghton College, my husband thought I'd get a job. Well, I had 50 resumes out and I didn't have one, so I said, the Lord only says to work unto the Lord. There's nothing that stated anything about having a job. And so I volunteered at the library, putting on the whole library on database until February when I finished it, and Donnie said, I think we need another column. So I started going back through. And one of the times when Isla came in the library, I said, you know, Isla, she did the yearbook at the academy. I said, you know, you could use Photoshop and PageMaker and have the students do their own yearbook. And she said, oh, Mr. Stockin would never consider that. And so I thought, okay, that's one job I don't have to do. And until a couple weeks before school started the next year. And she said, by the way, Mr. Stockin said that you can do that. I said, what? I don't have the programs. I don't have a computer capable. I don't even know how to start the program. So I sold my computer and I bought another computer with the capability, and I went over to Blumenthal's in Olean and took lessons. And since I was a student at George Washington by then, I could get a good deal on the programs. And so I went and learned it and taught it, and it was such an exciting thing because my daughter and Akash, who was going to be our son-in-law, were in the class, and that's a whole nother story.
Hello, everybody. I got to know Isla. My name is Janice, and I got to know Isla working at Houghton Academy. I was school counselor, and she was, well, the nurse in the mornings, and so our offices were near one another, and we got to know each other, got to be really good friends. Our initial connection was the Canadian Wesleyan roots that she had with her dad and her dad's side of the family, and I'm Canadian and Wesleyan, so that kind of brought us together. We had lots of stories about that, and I had the privilege of talking to her dad a little bit about that as well. But she would come over to my office, and we'd have our breaks together. So she would pop her head into my office, and she would say, Janice, is it time for a dew? Meaning Mountain Dew, and she called it dew. And she said, is it time for a dew? That meant it was time for us to have our break. I said, sure. So she'd go down the hall to the drink machine, get a Mountain Dew. I would go ahead over to the nurse's office and wait for her there. She'd come back with the dew, and then she'd get the little paper cups that the kids would take the medicine in. And so she'd pull out two of those, and we'd share the dew. So she'd pour a little bit in each cup and she'd give me mine, and we would sit and talk about life and all kinds of things. And she probably found out more about me at that time than my husband Norm knew at that time. I probably talked about you, Norm, I'm sorry. But it was such a wonderful memory for me, and such a wonderful time of probably maybe 12 or 13 years that we shared that time together. And I can say I am a better person because of having had do with Isla.
Hi, I'm Laura Beth Stockin Norton. You heard my brother, Phil Stockin, that lets you know who I am, okay? When I come to Houghton now, that's how I identify myself. I'm Phil Stockin's sister. But being a Stockin means I'm one of the 26 grandchildren on the Ortlip side, John Shea being one of the oldest. And with 26 grandchildren, you know, born over the course of two decades, there were sort of cohorts. And Isla would have been a big kid to me. She's 9 years my senior. And I think it's fair to say that when family gatherings would take place, you know, the older kids probably didn't care so much what the younger ones were doing. Is that fair? But Isla, I'm sorry, what?
That's fair.
That's fair? Yeah, Phil says that's fair. Isla would be an exception. Isla was always so kind to the little ones. And being a Stockin house was here in Houghton, and many cousins came and lived with us when they went to college. And Isla was one of those. And when she came as a freshman, I don't know how all this was decided, but she was my roommate. She had a fourth grader for a roommate, God bless her. And she was, again, so kind. People talked about her little sketches. I would find them on my pillow. A little Bible, who am I? There'd be a little character and maybe, you know, a burning bush and some stone tablets. Who am I? So I had these little Bible quizzes on my pillow I'd find. And another thing I remember fondly is that she dedicated a song to me on WJSL. I believe it was Teddy Bear's Picnic. So I have no punchline to this, but it was just, you know, more examples of Isla's ongoing kindness always. One of my favorite big cousins.
I'm not going to tell you who, but I just want to know you to know about Isla's impact. The church got a letter with a $1,000 check for this luncheon from a friend from childhood, from Houghton. And all I know is that Isla made an impact. And so you're eating the results of her wonderful love.
Excuse me, my brother just told me that I left something out. When I emailed him, I had included something else. Isla also made clothes for my favorite paper doll. And they were so much cute. I don't know, nobody, if you're under, I don't know, people don't play with paper dolls anymore, but they were big. And I had a little Lulu paper doll, and she made clothes that were so much cuter than the ones that had come with the doll. So she could have had a career maybe in clothing design, but she went a different direction.
Get to know Isla at least very well until we were both in New York. I went from Houghton. I worked here after I graduated. I was a head resident at East Hall. But always in the back of my mind, I felt like I really wanted to go into nursing. And there were various times that I asked the Lord, is this the time? And it didn't seem to be. But I remember one period of time. I was at East Hall, and I felt like the Lord was saying it was okay. So I spent the first year up at Warsaw Hospital and did the beginning of their program, and I was so glad I did because they did so many of hands-on kinds of things. But the administrators there knew I was a college graduate, and they said, you really need to get in a college program. I didn't know there was any other but Columbia because I had seen them go out of here by the dozens. So I made application and went, but I was scared silly because I was in New York City. I'd grown up in the Adirondacks, and I just didn't like the idea of the city life. But Isla was there, and I'd gotten to know her well, or better, because we worked together at Cape Cod with John and Maud Higgins, who ran an inn at there. And we had a wonderful summer. And during that time, she and I became closer friends, and we ended up, that summer, everybody was kind of in this thing of twisting your name so that your first name had your last name at the beginning. Like, my name was Tyler, and it would have been started with a J. So anyway, she turned out to be Shyla, and I was Tyke. And that's what we called each other the whole time. But anyway, when I went to New York, I was scared silly. As Evie said this morning, she was at the graduate nurses, the staff nurses' residence, and we were at Maxwell Hall. And we all were going down to Calvary Baptist Church in the mornings. But when I looked at the program, I really wanted to go at night. But I didn't want to go by myself because it meant going on the subway. So Isla said she would go with me. So March 9th, 1969, Isla and I went to the subway station, took the A train, but when we got there on the platform, there was one man standing there. And we probably acknowledged each other's presence, but Isla and I got in on the car in front of the car that he rode on. We got to 59th Street, Lincoln Center area, got out, and we proceeded down the sidewalk, and he caught up to us by the time we got in the church, and he said, "Let me open the door for you. I thought you were coming here." And it was now my husband. And Isla, as Evie mentioned, Isla was supposed to be my maid of honor, but she had a transfer to Kamakwi. But then later on, Doug was in medical school, and we were able, I don't know, were you going to say something, Doug? Anyway, in his last year, there was a rotation at Columbia Medical School that was medicine in the tropics. And Isla was trying to get Kamakwi as one of the hospitals that Columbia would send medical students to. So he was the first one, and we went and spent 2 months at Kamakwi and just had a wonderful, wonderful time getting our hands into the ministry there and realized the importance of MAP, the medical assistance program. In fact, the day we got there, they had had a whole load of equipment, including, I think, x-rays and all of the medicines that they sent. So we really felt the impact of the wider work of the kingdom. But Isla was just had a very special place in my heart, even today, and I look forward to being with her for eternity.
I'm Doug, and I'm Jackie's husband. And I have to add something to the story. I wasn't going to say anything, but Harold Brown was the professor of parasitology at Columbia for this medicine in the tropics program. It was an elective for fourth-year medical students. And since Kamakwi was not on the list of hospitals that were quote-unquote approved, I had to meet with him, talk to him about this place. So he went into his office, and he had this atlas. He opened it up. It was probably a good 5 feet. And each country had a full page. So Sierra Leone was sitting there on this full page, and he wanted to know where it was. I said, well, I spelled it for him. He looked through the map and looked through the map. He said, it must be a good place because I can't find it. That's what he was interested in, because he didn't want medical students going over, staying in the capital and getting an Americanized form of healthcare that was needed in that country. Kamakwi had a great reputation. But it was also a great education because Green Behind the Gills with American Medicine the first morning I got there in my operating room with Bud Taisinger, and we were operating on a hydroseal that was about the size of a basketball, downhill from there. An education that was truly see one, do one, and then teach one. A lot of things got done in Africa, and it was really an eye-opening experience. I did things that residents, specialties, never got to do until they got into their senior level. All during that period of time, because it was a great deal of medical culture shock for me, Isla was a kind of a person that epitomized to me, you get what you put into life. You can Christianize that, and you should. But so many times we are faced with issues that we look at the problem right here and we walk away from it saying, I can't handle it. But it's what you put into it, and you take a step, and God takes a step, you take another step. Eventually the issue either gets solved or it's modified or it gets better or it goes away. And it really taught me a lot of things about healthcare that I would have never learned in America. Having stayed and done a pediatric residency in America, that's very, very true. And I just thank God for not only giving me a wife through the friendship of Isla, but her invitation to come over to Africa and spend that two-week proctorship to learn some things that the 90% of the world has to deal with, but America does not. Isla was a real, she was interested in you. And even though I was a budding medical, I was a medical student, budding doctor and everything, she wasn't intimidated by that. She really realized that I was very green behind the gills. And in fact, that's the way it should be. And that's what she was trying, not only to provide healthcare for Kamakwi, but she was trying to emphasize to the healthcare community that these people just need as much help as anybody else in the rest of the world. So Isla was really proctoring. Isla gets remembered every year on March 9th for the last 53 years. Jackie and I celebrate our meeting in the subway by going to Subway Sandwich Shop. And we particularly look for a subway that has the old New York City subway system on the wallpaper. And we try to sit in a booth that has the A train on it. And we remember Isla each time we do that.
I'm Eli, grafted into the family, but Isla's touched all of us in different ways. And I think it was for me, she's always been Aunt Isla to me, by the way, always. She was just a natural aunt to take on when I married into the Shea family. I think because we connected on really the level of nature, which has been so meaningful to me, that Linda and I would go up to Windy Meadows, which I always loved doing, and I would just be drawn to her windows and watching the birds out the windows. And a lot of us in this room have had kind of various poverty stretches of our lives, I think. And for me, of course, I was kind of courting Linda and, you know, no money to my name and trying to figure out, but still appreciating all the beautiful art around me when we would go up and see Aunt Isla. And one of her paintings was of a local, just this beautiful forest that she said was behind her house at Windy Meadows. And I just fell in love with that painting. Every time I'd go in there, I'd see this beautiful, you know, Aunt Isla was a watercolorist, but also did oils, and this is just a rich oil painting. And I think I made my affection for the painting a little bit too obvious when I would go in there. And eventually I just said, "And I just love that painting. I love that painting." And she goes, as only family would do, you know, "Well, you can buy it." And and I was like, "I would love to." And, you know, Aunt Isla, gracious that she was, you know, she never sold her paintings for what I think they're always worth way more than what she ever sold them for. But she's like, "Well, how about you work for it?" And I was like, "Well, that's kind of biblical, you know, Jacob and, you know, Laban, and now I'm going for Rachel. I don't know who I'm going to end up with." Anyways, So she's like, I have to be away this summer. And, you know, her house was teeming with livestock. Well, not livestock, waterfowl, as has been made clear several times. Waterfowl, but also cats. Lots and lots of cats. Like, you go up there and just be swarmed. They'd be darting in and out of your legs and out of doors. And cats that I don't even know she knew she had sometimes. And dogs and everything else. And she said, just come up and take care of my stuff when I'm away. And I think there were various times I had to go up all through the summer. And so dutifully, with my eyes on that painting, I went up, and sure enough, it felt very like I was working for something great, kind of working my way into the family. And Isla came true. I worked off the painting, and she gave it to us, and so now it hangs proudly in our entranceway, and every time I see it, I think of Aunt Isla. But there was another painting, too, that I didn't have to work for, and I've been touched by a lot of people sharing who a lot of us have artwork in our house from her, and we always think of her now when we see that, which is a lasting gift. But one of them, she said, she was in one of those, you know, benevolent moods that she's in. She's like, I'd like to give you guys this. And it's a landscape of behind your house. Windy Meadows has this pond full of koi, Kevin, which he's told me he will not come up and share about his escapades with koi. But I'm trying to set him up so that he can't not come up. Anyways, there's a pond behind her house, and occasionally in the winter when the sun is at a low angle and it's really cold, you get this phenomenon called a double sunrise, and I think they're called something like sun dogs. I'm not totally familiar with it. And it's really a fascinating painting because, you know, we expect the sun to come up in one place. But here she woke up one morning and the sun was seemingly coming up in two places. And it's the way the light refracts as it's at this low angle. And there's like two beams of light. And she's like, I'd like to give you this. And I was like, great, wow, fantastic. And so, of course, we have it, and we have it in our bedroom. And I see it probably every day when I wake up. Deep breaths, all right. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, the painting had been up in our house, and, excuse me, Linda, rescue me. All right, good, there's the comic relief that I needed. Okay, we're back. So I was in the typical harried state. Linda and I have been married a number of years by now, and I'm rushing off to class because I'm always late, and I go bolting out of the house, and it's pretty early, and it was winter. And sure enough, I go outside, and there's two beams of light, straight. And it was the coolest thing ever. And now I just think that every time I see that, it's kind of like the Noah's rainbow. But for me, it's this double sunrise. She was a great, great person. And I'm just so glad that she touched my life in so many ways. Thanks.
Kevin, I'm going to tell a story so you can come talk about koi next, because Eli needs your humor. So there's so many things we could say about Aunt Isla. You can see the spectrum of ways that she touched people. One of the things that I'll always hang on to is how she connected with kids. So it might be a family gathering, but the kids were valued, and she needed attention, and she would almost always, when we got overseas, it was a bit harder for her, but she would buy books for the kids. And they were Caldecott award-winning or Newbery award-winning, always something like that. Like, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, you know, those kind of books that are deep literature. Always. And she always put a lot of thought into it. She would sign her name in the front. So we have so many of her books. Some of them we had to bless someone else before we left East Africa and came back to the States to serve internationally, but most of them we've kept, and it just means so much that she saw the little ones as well as valuing the adults. She really saw people, and I can talk about koi.
So I'm Kevin, and I also was grafted into the family by marriage, which I'm grateful. Thank you for having me. I'll be honest, like, I've heard all the lovely things about Isla. When I first met her, I was terrified of Isla. The reason being, Robin was living with Isla for a while in college, and I called, this is before I ever met her, I called one night to talk to Robin, and Isla answered the phone, so that she said, "Kevin, it's really late. No, you may not talk to her," and hung up on me. And so I thought, oh no, Robin's been taken captive by a really mean aunt, and I don't know if I'll ever get her back. Then I met her and I realized none of that was true. It was a huge misreading on my part. And I really grew to love Isla and to love the investment that she made. And all the cousins, but mainly in our kids as well. It's always, we work with kids, and anytime I meet someone who sees kids and sees their hearts, it always warms my heart, and that's who Isla was. The Koi story is not really that interesting, really. They built it up, and so now you're going to hear it and think, that was kind of lame. And so I apologize in advance for that. When we would come up to Houghton, Houghton was always kind of a strange place to me. The first time I drove up here, Robin was giving me directions, and I was going to college in Florida, and she said, okay, when you get into Houghton, turn left. And I said, wait, how many lights before I turn left? And the phone just got really quiet. And she said, well, if you see a light, you're in Fillmore, and it blinks. So I thought, oh no, where does she live? I've seen villages in Africa, and I thought, she lives in a village in America. And it's true, she does. She did. So I came up here, and, you know, there's not really a ton to do unless you're willing to be outside. And so I love being outside. And so Isla gave me a task. They had a little fish pond that had a bunch of koi in it. And she thought that the instructions were that the large koi were to be removed from the little pond and released into the large farm pond. So I'm not a great fisherman, but because they were in a very small space, I successfully nabbed all of the large koi and released them into the farm pond. Only to realize that was a misunderstanding. The assignment really was to catch the little koi and release them into the farm pond, but to keep the large koi in the little bitty fish pond. So the rest of the week that I was here, my job was to try to recapture the large koi out of the farm pond to reintroduce them into the small fish pond. Uncle Paul even took me down to Fillmore to the fish trap factory. They gave me like one of every kind of net they had. They gave me one of them just to help me out because they could tell I was a desperate man. And I literally spent an entire week. One time I actually had them hemmed up in one part of the pond and I almost captured them, but one of them escaped between my legs and made a break for it out into the big water. Finally I got in on a snow fence and I stretched it across the whole pond and I slowly, meticulously moved the snow fence across the pond. My idea was that eventually they would be trapped into a very small space and I would successfully capture them. We went to the campground up there near Windy Meadows, I can't remember the name of it, borrowed fishing poles and tried hot dogs. For all I know, the koi are still successfully thriving in the large pond because they were never recaptured. And that's the koi story. As I told you, it was going to be a little bit disappointing after they built it up as much as they did. So.
Not follow that with humor. I'll bring it back to the serious. Thank you, Kevin and Eli and Robin, because I think what you've said about Aunt Isla, care of kids, kind of relates to something that I've been thinking a lot about. As someone who doesn't have kids, but I have wonderful nieces and nephews, I feel like I relate a lot to what Aunt Isla experienced, and it makes me really just thankful for seeing how she loved us. And I mean, my nieces and nephews are the light of my life, the lights of my life, and so I think I can understand a little bit of what she felt too. The other thing I remember a lot about Anna is the animals, the ducks, the fish, the cats, Buster the dog, and she poured love into those creatures, and they were so important to her. And it actually reminded me of The Great Divorce. There's a little passage in The Great Divorce. When I was reading that, it made me think of Anna. I'm going to summarize a little bit and then just read a little bit. It's in, I think it's chapter 12 here, where person sees this great lady coming in these splendid robes, and she's surrounded by thousands of singing angels and creatures coming with her, and he thinks this is maybe Mary, the mother of Jesus. He doesn't know who this is, but he thinks he calls her a great lady. He finds out from his companion, this is just a lady named Sarah Smith. She was just a woman on earth, no significance to anyone. But where they were in paradise and heaven, I guess, the great, great lady. So I've thought of that with Aunt Isla. And so he's asking his companion about this woman, and he says, "Who are all these young men and women on each side?" "They are her sons and daughters. She must have had a very large family, sir." And he says to her, "Every young man or boy that met her became her son, even if it was only the boy that brought the meat to her back door. Every girl that met her was her daughter. Isn't that a bit hard on their own parents?" "No, there are those that steal other people's children, but her motherhood was of a different kind. Those on whom it fell went back to their natural parents, loving them more." A bit farther. "And how, but hello, what are all these animals? A cat, two cats, dozens of cats, and all those dogs. Why, I can't count them, and the birds, and the horses. They are her beasts. Did she keep a sort of zoo? I mean, this is a bit too much. Every beast and bird that came near her had its place in her love. In her, they became themselves. And now the abundance of life she has in Christ from the Father flows over into them." I looked at my teacher in amazement. "Yes," he said, "it's like that when you throw a stone into a pool and the concentric waves spread out further and further. Who knows where it will end? Redeemed humanity is still young, and it has hardly come to its full strength. But already there is joy enough in the little finger of a great saint such as yonder lady to waken all the dead things of the universe into life." And I picture Aunt Isla like that great lady with her animals. I think all of those animals are with her. That's my belief. And I think we will be with her too. So that's how I think of her when I read this.
I saw you stirred the hornet's nest, and I just thought of a whole bunch of little cute things, I think. Isla was born in Warsaw Hospital prematurely. I think she was stuck there for a couple of weeks before we could bring her home. I was, by that time, about 1.5 years old. When she came home, the house, I remember clearly, was owned by that missionary Mary Lane Clark. Right opposite the log home, the Nortons lived there many years, but we lived there from about 43 to 45. You know the house I mean, next to the Ayers? Terry, okay, just south. And she was displayed in a bassinet right inside the front door in the living room. My bedroom was upstairs, and I remember waking up to the clanging sounds of milk from the Babbitts' farm every morning delivered to the milk plant, Briars. The bassinet was really high for me, so I pulled it to get up, and it started to tip over. And if I had succeeded, we might not be here. But he caught the bassinet. Last year, I remember talking somehow about that house. And that girl, we moved out of that place in about 1.5 years as well. She told me where the rooms were. She said down the hall was the bathroom that way, and the kitchen was out back, and our mother worked in a little side place on the south side of the house with her office to do flannel graph for YMWB. But that girl was not able to manage so many things in her mind, but she called back that pattern of the house. There's no way she could have made that up.
Isla?
Isla. I was marching around with a little flag, march up soldiers, boom a laddie boom and stuff. I had dozens of songs, and she somehow remembered, you know, a young kid. She wanted always a little sister. After Paul came along, that wasn't adequate. She wanted a sister. So her name was going to be Kathy. Remember that, Paul? Yeah, it went on for years. And Mom and Dad just didn't see that in the realm of possibility in her, in their ministry, which they carried on with at YMWB until about 1954, something like that. One day, Isla was doing a little commission. Somebody across the river here, you may have an idea who, I don't, had asked her to paint a scene of the river. So she drew a beautiful little drawing. It was lovely, but I suggested to her, you know, there needs to be a little life in the river. What do you think? I said, well, supposing you see these little circles in the water, you know, just little oval circles, you wonder what happened. Well, she thought that was a good idea. So the picture was pretty nice, and it's just kind of subtle. And then a little shadow there, there's just a little ring. And if you watch it long enough, you... But after that, from time to time, little animals would show up in her paintings. And if you look at a couple of those we showed, you can look at it back online again. And there's a bird on a tree limb, and there was a bird and another one. And then and one, I don't know that we showed this one, it had a little rabbit down in the weeds in the field, you know. So she picked that up. Now, I think my cousin Audrey, who is not present, and I believe will have been looking at that slideshow today, she thinks that that kind of diminished the artistic value of her work. I think it was from her heart. She loved to see some little wildlife in those pictures. And maybe she didn't get $150 for that picture. It depended on the frame and all a lot, how it cost. But it was her good art. Praise the Lord.
The last painting that Isla sold was after she passed away at the Copaco, where you can get coffee and see art down where the laundromat was. Houghton Academy students had an auction for raising money for refugees, Afghans. So I grabbed one of our paintings, a little African violet, and is anybody here the one who bought that? I think somebody paid $75 for that painting for refugees. And I think that's the last painting that Isla sold. Now, if you want to buy a painting, no, I'm not selling anything.
So I think it's,
oh, it's getting near kind of the last things she did around then. 2016, and the name of it is Almost Home. And you can see very faintly a mother and a child walking down a path getting home in Sierra Leone. So I kind of treasure that. This sat in Ace's Country Restaurant in Belfast, and nobody bought it. You can see the thing down here. So it's number 19. Almost Home. And I took them all off the Ace's Country Store walls. And that's pretty precious, because I think it's one of her last ones.
Don't have anything super profound to say, but I just thought I'd share a couple memories. Some of you may or may not know that, Isla impacted me through these little incidents. One was that she had me come up to her house. I'm Linda, by the way, Paul's youngest. She hired me to come up to her house once a week up on Centerville Road there, Windy Meadows, and I would clean Joy and Isla's house for $10 a week, and I had to dust every shelf and every little item. I think I was probably in fifth or sixth grade at the time. And so I would look forward to going up there, and I'd always have a little snack, maybe grape juice or ginger ale or something, and crackers, and it was just this really special time. So I memorized kind of every object on their shelves and every picture on the wall and all that. But another way that I, as I got older, interacted with her was through art. She was my art teacher at Houghton Academy, and I have not grown into an amazing artist or anything, but I will always remember some of the lessons she taught me and just the way that she helped me to see the world. Same with, I think, our grandmother too, and probably Marge as well. But she taught me that if you want something to look far away, you make it be a cool color. And if you want something to look closer, you make it be a warm color. So in every picture, every landscape I see, I'm always thinking about that. And so she shaped just the way I view the world. Another thing she taught me was that when you do a picture or painting, the part of the picture that has the most contrast is the focus. So whenever you paint, you want to have your darks and your lights. Wherever that is, that's going to be where everybody's eye goes. And so, again, how I see the world, how I look at art, or how I just look at every day is very much shaped constantly by her. And then the last thing I've been thinking a lot about is the ways that she was drawn to the marginalized of our society. She worked in a prison in Belmont with women that were incarcerated and did, I think, Bible studies. But here, when she lived in Houghton, she worked at the nursing home, But she also went this extra mile where she would just minister to people beyond the physical, and she somehow roped others into that ministry, and I don't remember how or what or what, how she did it, but she got me going up there. And when I was in college, there was a girl who was, I think, like late teens, early 20s, that was living in the nursing home. I don't know what the degenerative disease was that she had, but her name was Lucy, and she was paralyzed, like from some, like the neck down. And she was taking classes at the college, miraculously too. But I would go and spend time with Lucy, all because of Isla, because she convinced me that this was a good thing to do. And it was profoundly, like, it changed me, going up there and spending this time with this girl who, I think she was 21 or so when she passed away. But I would go up there and just hang out with her, and I thought, you know, I was there to encourage her, but the whole time she was actually, Lucy was impacting me. And I just think that Isla's ability to care and to do something and to help those who kind of the rest of society overlooked was very powerful, and that shaped the rest of my life. Not in big ways, but just, and again, what I see.
So Alan, the nephew, one of my memories of Isla is whenever we were traveling, she wanted to know our flight schedule. She wanted to pray for each flight.
The only thing on the agenda is to go when you want to go and stay as long as you want to stay. We will, you know, the family will just kind of pick up some things here, but not the fancy things. They're coming later to pick up the fancy stuff. There's so many people to thank. You know, the church wasn't doing dinners during COVID, and we found a caterer in Silver Springs. And I can mention the gift that came that allowed the church to just do that. And then the church did some extras, like getting the Amish pies from Shepherd's Place. Judy Maley is the decorator par excellence. Jill and Carl, some of our Bible study friends, they've volunteered to help us. And Andrew doing the ice cream, just everybody, people setting up chairs. Thank you so much for all your help. And you're the remnants. You're the end of the show right now. So thank you very much. Stay as long as you want. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time. Evie and Gary for coming from there. Somebody from Tennessee, somebody from Georgia, somebody from Indiana in the middle of the night. And all of you who came. Let's see, where do you come from, Robin? I don't even know where you live right now. Ozark? Somewhere down in Missouri. So, and if you're Florida, John Angel came from Florida, and of course Joy was going to be here, and several others had to cancel out, but this has far surpassed all the 5 months of blood, sweat, and tears for getting ready for it. Don't ever do that, you know. If you're going to have a funeral, do it about a week later. But the nice thing was we got a lot of planning in, and John spent countless hours on this slideshow. Some of us tried to take pictures and we didn't do too well, but it's still going up here if you want to see it. And then it'll be archived on the website at Houghton Wesleyan Church. You can watch the service, the people you couldn't hear because the sound may have been just a little. And then, oh, the singing of Josie. Last minute we said that's who should do it. And Mrs. Greenway, who's not here very much of the year, she's in other places around the country, but she agreed to do the piano. Judy, I mean, instantly I knew I wanted Judy on the organ, and I'm going to go home and listen for All the Saints because I walked out on that one. And you need to go listen to the prelude again. You were watching the pictures, but she was playing some wonderful music, Isla's favorites. So, all right, that's all I have to say. Thank you all, and appreciate you staying through the day here. Lord, thank you for the wonderful friends and the people that were in the service earlier, and the people around the world, some who are watching, even take this message today of 1 Corinthians kind of love and friendship and the love of Jesus for us, and work in the hearts of people too. And bless the travel. I know some people had hard times getting here, and may it be smoother going home and safe. Thank you for all your blessings. In Jesus' name, amen.